We've got a new episode of Swings and Mishes on deck with a lot happening this week with the Miami Marlins. The holidays are coming, and that means it is car buying season. And those of you who are looking to purchase a pre-owned vehicle, I want to encourage you to go to this website, happycarsflorida.com. Or go visit the inventory there at 203 West State Road 84 in Fort Lauderdale, 33315. The phone number is 954-745-9599. You've heard me talk about Happy Cars Florida now all 2019, and the deals that they have going on right now are unbelievable. And better yet, if you want to buy any kind of car for you or your loved one, call Louie at 954-745-9599 and say that you heard about this on the Swings and Mishes podcast and that Craig sent you directly. He will get you into any car that you want. Louie is unbelievable. He's been involved in car buying and car selling for over two decades here in South Florida, and he can get you exactly what you want. I've been buying cars directly from Louie as well. So you can trust him and head on over there. He does all the financing in-house, whether or not you have good credit, bad credit, or even no credit whatsoever. He will take care of you. Again, financing done on the site there. 203 West State Road 84 in Fort Lauderdale. That is happycarsflorida.com. Make sure you give him a call. 954-745-9599.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to a special episode of Swings and Mishes, live from the winter meetings. Not myself. I'm down here still in South Florida, but Craig Mish, our one and only, is out in San Diego for the winter meetings. Craig, how's it doing in California for you right now?
Well, it was the first days in the books, and so now we're here on day two. Mm-hmm. And Steven Strasburg signed his contract with the Washington Nationals. So just that signing alone is basically more than what happened all of last year, to be honest with you. So I'm excited. We're off to a good start here, and hopefully the Marlins will make some moves. As we'll talk about, they made some minor moves yesterday, and then hopefully today we'll see some more.
Right, yeah, it's been a really interesting start to the winter meetings. Like you said, it's already sort of more action than anything that happened last season. On the Marlins side of things, their biggest news of the day was that Tyler Kinley, the relief pitcher, was waived by the Marlins and actually did not clear through waivers. He was picked up by the Colorado Rockies, and thus another roster spot opens for the Marlins on their 40-man roster. Kinley's no longer with the team. And I'm wondering your thoughts on that move with Tyler Kinley and what it means for the Marlins.
Yeah, he didn't take long to pass through waivers. Certainly the Rockies were not that far behind in terms of the priority in the National League, so they end up scooping up Kinley. And I can tell you that the issue with him is just walking too many batters last year, and the Marlins are right now really focused on guys who can throw strikes, and back-to-back weeks they've let go of players that they felt had issues doing that. I think on the one hand you understand it, on another hand you wonder if they could have developed the kids a little bit more and got them to throw strikes, because I think that's part of what a staff is supposed to be. But, you know, very succinctly, I've asked these questions both publicly and privately and been told point blank the Marlins feel that their bullpen will be better, and they feel like they can do better than Tyler Kinley and Tyron Guerrero in the bullpen this year. So we'll take that at face value, and then we'll judge it at the end of 2020. But, you know, Jeff Breidich, the general manager of the Rockies, said that he had been after Kinley now for a while and liked his durability and liked the fact that he can pitch multiple innings. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out. But, yeah, it's going to be – I mean, revamp is not even the word for this bullpen. It's going to be a complete redo. You know, I think that at this point – and I'm not big on spending huge money in the bullpen, and we'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. You know, Harlan Garcia from the left side is, you know, certainly looks reliable. And I'll give the benefit of the doubt to Ryan Stanek, who just seemed out of sorts last year. Beyond that, there isn't a lot.
No.
So, yeah, you can name Conley and you can say Steckenrider. I mean, these guys are on the team, certainly, but I mean, I don't think there's any guarantees with that. So from a reliability standpoint, I think they have to be in the market for at least two bullpen arms.
Right, well, and like you just mentioned, Conley and Steckenrider, I believe those are the only two pitchers from their opening day bullpen last season who were still on the roster. So like you just mentioned, a total redo of that bullpen. And so the question becomes, where do the Marlins go from here in terms of their bullpen? Do you think that they're close to anything in terms of, you know, getting something done here at the winter meetings? Or what do you think that the mindset needs to be for the Marlins as they move forward in trying to reshape that bullpen?
Yeah, I think that they're going to spend some money on a bat. Mike Hill did not, you know, say, hey, we're not spending money on the bullpen. But I kind of feel like he did a little bit on Monday night. I kind of felt like, which is fine, by the way. I'm not a big believer in spending a ton of money there. But the rest of the financial threshold I think that they have is to acquire another bat in some way. And I think they'll get two more relievers, Jeremy, but I don't know that they'll be of the high price tag in terms of, like, who's left, Blake Treinen and Will Harris. Like, let's use those two as an example. I think those players are going to command either very high single-year deals or, better yet, multi-year deals with the teams that they would sign. They're two very good relievers. Now, John Heyman earlier on Monday reported that the Marlins were still in on Romo.
Right.
And I asked that question. That is true. So they and a handful of other teams as of Tuesday morning, us doing this, are still trying to acquire Romo, which is a little bit surprising. But part of the explanation on Romo, from what I'm gathering, is this is not just strictly a Romo thing. This is what Mike Hill called a, quote, different look type pitcher. And this goes back to having multiple looks from different pitchers in your bullpen. What does that mean? Well, 2 years ago, they had Brad Ziegler, who, of course, you know, threw from a different angle, which created a different look for batters. You put a fireballer in like Bearclaw at the time. And then, you had Ziegler come in the ninth, and he had Ziegler in the eighth, Bearclaw in the ninth. Steckenrider was really good that year. Conley was really good that year, too. So Romo gives you that different look. So it could be a combination of him and somebody else, or better yet, what is the answer if Romo does not pick the Marlins, which is certainly the case. I mean, if Romo wants to compete right out of the gate next year, he would not pick Miami.
Right.
He said all the right things about the Marlins, but I don't know. I mean, if he could go back to the Twins and pitch for them again and guarantee himself in a pennant race, you know, with all due respect to the Marlins, I don't know why he would do that unless more money's on the table. So I will look for some other pitchers potentially to be in the mix. The one pitcher I want to mention here on the podcast, this will be the first time that anybody mentions his name, will be Joe Smith. I think that Joe Smith will be a name that we'll start to hear about. Now, he pitched for Houston, of course, the last couple of years, had an injury and then came back from it. And at this stage of Joe Smith's career, I would guess he would possibly want to pitch for a contender. He's been around the league a long time. But I believe that the Marlins would have some interest in him, depending on, what happens as the winter goes on. And then they'll have to sign somebody else as well. But that's a name to watch, I think, as the winter goes on. Excuse me.
So as the Marlins do sort of figure out how to divvy up the rest of the finances and that part of it, it will be interesting to see, you know, like you just mentioned, where that money goes in terms of the bullpen and where it goes in terms of, you know, establishing more bats in that order. We've already seen, as we talked about on our last podcast, Jonathan Villar, Jesus Aguilar added to that roster as of last week. But now, you know, we talked about last week as well, the Marlins coaching situation, and now they've added their first base coach. It's Billy Hatcher. And, you know, what are your thoughts? What are you hearing about the process as the Marlins decided to sign Billy Hatcher as their first base coach to join Don Mattingly and the rest of the staff?
Yeah, Hatcher's been around a long time and as a player and as a coach. And my guess he'll do a really good job as the first base coach. I like him a lot. I've always liked him in all the different stops he's made. Very good interview for the media. And certainly he's been around the league for a long time. So a pretty easy spot once Hensley Mullins decided not to come and take that job. By the way, he's here at the winter meetings too. I saw him. It was funny with the New York Mets. So So Billy Hatcher is at first, and of course at third base will be Trey Hillman. And I believe Joe Fusaro had that report earlier yesterday.
Right. And now the staff is coming into form, and obviously, you know, you just mentioned the rest of the roster will come into form, and we'll have that for you guys over the next couple of days here on Swings and Mishes. And if you follow Craig at Craig Mish on Twitter. One thing you did break today, and this is a general major league story, Craig, is that the first-year amateur draft is going to be moving to Omaha. So could you talk a little bit about what led to first of all, breaking that story, but second of all, you know, what Major League Baseball is thinking in moving the first year amateur draft that happens every June over to Omaha, Nebraska.
Heavy drinking in a lobby? No, I'm kidding. That's not yeah, I mean, look, there's just not much to it. You're fortunate to be in a situation where a lot of people are here at the winter meetings, and so you get you know, different pieces of information from different people. You know, without going into more detail on that, you know, clearly this is great for baseball. I think it's huge. They're going to have this the draft, I believe, is going to be on Wednesday as opposed to Monday, so it'll basically be on the eve or close to when the College World Series is going to be in Omaha. And look, it's been honestly a little stale in having it in New Jersey. I mean, the coverage has been fine for television, but, you know, not all of the kids go. And, you know, I just think being around a college is a fun atmosphere. And why not have it in the place where you're going to have the College World Series? You'll have players in the College World Series. We saw the Marlins take J.J. Bleday last year, of course, from Vanderbilt. We had to wait that thing out until that was done. So, you know, I'm certainly excited for that. And we obviously will cover the draft as we get closer to it. But I think that this is good news for baseball in general. Remember, there was many years ago, I go back to the first time that they opened up the draft to the public, Jeremy. This was in Orlando, in your old stomping grounds, at the Milk House at Disney World in Orlando.
Wow.
They had the draft there. I drove up and went to the draft. I was at the first ever open draft. I was there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, they had it there. There's probably like 2,000 people there or something like that. And I don't remember who did the Marlins take in that draft. I'd have to go back and think about that. But I remember Brian Mattis was in that draft. Jake Arrieta with the Orioles, because the Orioles were training in Fort Lauderdale. So I remember those two. Hicks was drafted by the Twins. Aaron Hicks, now on the Yankees. I'd have to go back and remember. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of those players were there. I remember they were like eating burgers outside. It was kind of strange. But yeah, they had that draft in Orlando. And it was the only year they had it there, by the way. They moved it immediately to MLB Network right after that. It was a one-and-done type deal. They also honored, if I'm not mistaken, that year, the history of the Negro League players. They were all there too. I had a chance to meet a lot of them actually as well. So it was a cool experience.
That was the 2008 MLB draft. Kyle Skipworth was the sixth overall pick to the VN Florida Marlins out of Patriot High School in California.
That did not work out.
Yeah, that was just before Yonder Alonso of the Cincinnati Reds, obviously from Miami, Florida. So quite the interesting pick there at number six overall for the Marlins, but had to be a fun experience in Orlando. And yeah, I mean, like you just mentioned, the fact that it's going to be in Omaha, I think that leads to a fun spirit around baseball. There's very few things that feel more a mix of modern day, you know, we love watching baseball right now and we love watching college baseball, but there's very few things that feel like that nice mix between old school baseball and old school moments and nostalgia like Omaha, Nebraska, and the new age of baseball like the MLB draft. So it's nice to combine those two things and kind of see them come together. Before we get to your interview with Fernando Seganal, of the Marlins front office, I was wondering if you do have any sort of things, you know, everybody's listening here on Tuesday morning, if there's anything you think maybe the fans could be either looking forward to on day two of the winter meetings, or just sort of, you know, any tidbits of kind of what's going on out there in San Diego and what the winter meetings can be like for someone like you who's sitting here, you know, trying to report on all of it and kind of the hectic nature that sort of goes on out there in the winter meetings.
Sure. Well, I have a radio show every day on FNTSY Radio when I'm out here from 9 to 11 a.m. on Pacific time. Mm-hmm. So those of you who are catching this podcast right before, you can download the iHeartRadio app or tune in or the FNTSY and you can hear that. Although we do talk some Marlins, it's more about all of baseball and fantasy baseball as well. So I'm engulfed in that and, you know, setting up and getting everything ready for the broadcast from 9 to 11, which is not what I did last year. 2 years ago, I broadcasted with SiriusXM. Of course, now I'm no longer with SiriusXM.
Right.
And so FNTSY, you know, sent me out here as well as you know, the sponsorship for the podcast to be able to do that. So, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of checking the phone. I would not say I'm as intense as you know, some of the main, you know, baseball reporters out there, the national reporters. I try to do my best. And obviously, you know, having a big story last night, jumping in on that, I try to do that when I can.
Right.
But I am, you know, mostly focused on what Miami is doing. I feel like that's important. That's my primary goal with it. And, you know, the interesting thing that's changed, I guess, for me as opposed to like 5 years ago is the amount of texts and calls I get with people volunteering info to me, you know, like, and players like in the game, like just asking me what's going on. That's a cool thing. Like, that's not something that's always been the case, but growing this podcast and growing, you know, just the, I guess the credibility in the game has helped me out significantly. And seeing those people in the lobby, I mean, it's basically a fest of baseball executives and media all just talking. I mean, that's basically it. I don't know how else to describe it. You try to get outside of the hotel. It's like you have it in San Diego or you have it in Vegas. You try to make your way out. It's not that easy because there's always something going on. It's funny. Last night, Michael said he hadn't even seen outside. That's how busy he was inside. And it was the same thing last year in Vegas too. So it gets kind of busy. But there's always time for breaks, and it's great to, you know, catch up with people. You know, Cliff Floyd being one of them, a longtime friend of mine, like able to just, you know, and I know his family and he knows mine and we've been friends forever, but it's good like being out of the atmosphere and just being able to just sit down and look at each other and just talk about, you know, what's going on. You know, that's always a fun thing. And seeing people that I haven't seen in a long time, whether it's agents or executives, and having some executives and players ask me, you know, hey, what's up with the Marlins? You know, what are they doing and all that? So it's, you know, I guess, Jeremy, that kind of sums it up. From a fan experience, it's not really. I mean, you're in a hotel. I mean, that's it. I mean, there's not like you're watching a radio broadcast. If that moves you and that's exciting, well, then, yeah, I mean, you can come down and check that out. But this is not like an all-star game or certainly anything like that. But yeah, spending my day, you know, more or less from 9 to 11, I try to focus on the show and then, you know, texting out and making calls and everything like that. But yeah, a couple other things before we go.
Right.
So Fernando Seganal, I haven't talked to him in a while. So thought it would be a good idea to catch up with him, the director of international scouting, to kind of pick his brain as to where he's been going and what he's been seeing. Some surprising places he's been, by the way. The Marlins are scouting in some surprising places. And without ruining our guest Wednesday morning, I believe we're going to have a really good interview Wednesday, first time interview here on the podcast. So don't want to ruin it, but make sure you catch Wednesday mornings. And so, you know, if something happens, we'll pop on and we'll do another podcast, another interview or something like that. But for the time being, this is kind of the direction that we're going to go. Couple other things also before we go. I know that people on social media have asked me about other players that they may be after offensively and stuff like that. I've heard the same things that you guys have heard. There's really nothing to report. I did check in on Corey Dickerson because I thought that was a name potentially that the Marlins would be interested in. To my knowledge, without going any further into it, because I'm not sure the dynamics of it exactly, I do think he's a possibility for the Marlins is that they have not offered Corey Dickerson a contract. That I know. Beyond that, where he stands with other teams, I can't really speak to it. Avisel Garcia, I believe we're in the same situation here. I believe that the Marlins are just kind of waiting this out, Jeremy. I think that they are. I don't know that we'll see anything else done during the winter meetings. I would hope and like to think that, but can't make any guarantees on this one this year.
Yeah, so it will be. We'll have Craig out there at the winter meetings all week long. We'll catch you guys up tomorrow morning as well here on the podcast. Like Craig just mentioned, we can hop on if necessary if anything gigantic does happen. But it does sound like a little more waiting things out. But please enjoy this interview with Fernando Seganal. Be ready for tomorrow's podcast and follow at Swings and Mishes and at Craig Mish on Twitter for all of your information as we move forward. Hope you guys enjoyed the winter meetings 2019 recap of day one.
So, Seggy, how would you say things are going on the international market so far? Let's start off with an update for how the Marlins are looking.
Well, I would say that to date, since you know, we started out the process, you know, 2 years ago, I mean, it's been great finding really impact players, athletic players. You know, the interest level of other organizations looking at what we've been doing has been tremendously. They've been looking around and saying that, you know, things are building for the better, you know, in that sort of way. You know, so it's been great. It's been great so far. The process was a lot of things that we needed to change, you know, report writing, you know, better evaluations, getting the guys the right tools to work with. And just with the support, the constant support of ownership and executive directors. I mean, it's been great. You know, the level of support that we have receiving now to get, you know, work done. So it's been good.
We'll get into what could be for the future, but there is one market that I'd like you to expand on, and that is the Bahamas. It seems like at this point the Marlins have really taken over the market as far as that. And I keep hearing, no, it's just a coincidence that we ended up getting those players. But it would seem to me that there'd be a very big advantage in the proximity from the Bahamas to the United States and to Miami, and the fact that you already have three players from there that could be potentially at an elite level.
Well, definitely. You know, look at it as we're a gateway of the Americas, you know, and Bahamas being such a close proximity to Miami, you know, it makes sense, you know, to look into and know what you have in your neighbor, you know, it's a neighborhood. So, yes, it's not been coincidence. It's that we've been scouting heavily in there, and, you know, all every other place, Curacao, you're talking about, you know, going in there. I mean, Dominicans, you know, we know for a fact, you know, from back in the day that we got all these academies and stuff and a lot of players. But Bahamas has been interested. Very intriguing market because the players develop late. You know, they take them some time to catch up to what's going on with other part of different countries, like, you know, I would say Dominican Republic, Colombia, Panama. They don't have the same level, but athleticism, the bodies work, really good actions out there. That, I mean, it's very intriguing. You got to stick with these kids. You know, they're 12 years old, 13 years old, just got to follow them. Going in there and seeing just the level of athleticism on the field is amazing. So we definitely, we have put in, you know, you say we have Chisholm now, and we have Ian, you know, Ian Lewis coming in. So that would be great, you know, to see those guys, you know, come up and actually, you know, be impact players in the major league level.
Now catch us up with, since the regular season has ended, you being on the international trail, things that you have seen, and maybe give Marlins fans an idea as to what we may expect the Marlins to be involved in over the next year or so.
Well, no, definitely. We're working now on, you know, definitely to, you know, bring back impact players. I mean, we want guys to come in and contribute, you know, not only in the Dominican Republic, but I'm looking in Japan, I'm looking into, you know, Colombia. You see, we have, you know, some Alfaros there, and, you know, well, fortunately, well, Guerrero's not here, but, you know, we have some guys, you know, that are coming in and then stepping up. The farm is loaded with talent now. We're just happy to have those guys, you know, be part of the Marlins organization. And I've been nonstop. You know, in this department, we never stop. We keep going now. We try to find the players that we gotta bring to the Marlins, and then make sure they put on a good show and be here for a long time. Now I'm looking into even Europe and you know, Japan and Asia as well. I've been traveling all over the world. I mean, it's
give me your itinerary over the last where have you been?
Over the last 6 months, I would say, you know, going from, you know, London to.
You found a player in London?
We have evaluations on these guys. We're not going blindfolded. You know, we're definitely seeing these guys. We have them in the system. Japan, per se, Korea, Taiwan. So, you know, as being open-minded and bringing the best talent to the Marlins is our priority. And, you know, in Latin America, it's always been that, you know, the best players, you know, come out of the Latin countries because they play more. We got to deal in Europe, we got to deal with soccer and, you know, different other sports. But, you know, at least say, you know, you get some good bodies and guys who, you know, love to play the game. I mean, is we find some talent there.
You said that earlier in the interview when we first started, that the perception from people around the league, at least that they've shared with you, is that the Marlins have taken notice about some of the things that you've done. When you look back at the time that you've been here, I believe over a year, what are some of those things that you feel that they've taken notice with that the Marlins have accomplished that your peers around the league have said to you, good job on, or something specific, tangible, that you would know?
Well, I would say, well, it's going for 3 years now, and just the level of you know, talent that we are stacking up in the minor league system. There's kids coming up that, I mean, we're very excited about, you know, even from the GCO all the way through, you know, single A, you know, there's some guys that will be coming up, and Neymar is going to be very excited of those kids. I mean, you're talking about Junior, you know, Sanchez, and you're talking about Jose Salas and Luis and Victor Mesa Jr., you know. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, they've been impacting in their leagues now, and just see them, the level of maturity that they're showing, you know. I would say the educational part of our program as well in the DR help a lot, you know, to kind of build, you know, character around these kids, you know. So that's another impressive part that I think a lot of our peers have noticed, that we're doing a lot better following up, and not only signing players, but following up and their development from the Dominican Republic all the way through AAA. You know, so
I know the players have to be developed, which is another level. Yeah. But is Victor Mesa Jr. better than what maybe people thought when he first signed? Because everybody was so focused on Victor. I mean, Victor was kind of an afterthought there, like a package deal. You take this one, you get the other. But it seems like, at least from some of the reports, it seems like he's much better and much further along than people say.
Well, I would say that we know what we had. It wasn't for us. I don't think it was a consideration of a package deal. We have two really good players. They just needed to play. They just needed to play, and you know, they were recognized. You know, organization are recognizing that now that they've seen them play, you know, they could kind of see what we already have, you know, seen on paper. You know, we know we was getting two really good athletes and two really good ball players. I mean, Their dad was an outstanding ball player in Cuba, so we know they have that background. And just put them on the field and letting them be comfortable in their own skin, and just you know, monitoring their development. It's been great. So definitely those two guys, I mean, they're gonna say a lot, you know, down the road, that's for sure.
All right, last one. Give me any international player that you've been involved with the signing that you're still excited about, you're still maybe most proud of to this day. It can be a player that we all know or somebody that we don't know that you've brought into the Marlins organization. It doesn't matter. Give me anybody, any name. It has to be one.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, there's many players that I'm excited about. It's tough to just say one guy.
But if I made you do it.
You're making me do it. No, I'm just saying, we're excited about the players. The juniors, I mean, you know, Victor Jr., Victor. Very excited about what we've seen there. Guys more far along, I mean, I'm talking about Jose Salas, he would be a very impressive guy to see down the road on his development. Ian Lewis is another guy.